Frank Rich, what do you think the effect of the Saddam Hussein verdict will be on the election?
I think the effect of the Saddam Hussein verdict will be minimal. As more evidence has come in, my worst fear is that this would be yet another publicity stunt, if that's the word, timed for an election in America, as almost every development in Iraq, when they've held every election, all of it has been timed around American domestic politics. But I think the country's just turned off on this. And I think whatever happens in the election, they know that Saddam Hussein was captured. They knew that he was going to be, in all likelihood, found guilty and executed, as perhaps he should be, since he's a mass murderer. And I think it's already yesterday's news.
That quickly?
Yeah, first of all, I just think that the actual news from on the ground in Iraq is so bad that people are sick of hearing these turning points, these milestones that don't end the problem. The best thing that's come out of it probably is that a curfew has been imposed on Iraq, so there won't be that much news, at least as we're talking, coming out. But I think, frankly, they have all the Military Times publications calling for Rumsfeld's resignation in very, very provocative language a day after this verdict may counterbalance it or even outweigh it.
Your book, The Greatest Story Ever Sold, concerns in a way what Susan Sontag once called the Barnumization of America. Now, your book ends in the spring of 2006 because there's a six-month, five-month lag time. You are very optimistic at that point that the American public was fed up. Do you still feel that way? I mean, and how does the John Kerry flap play into that?
I'm convinced the American public is fed up. I decided to write the book essentially after Katrina because I felt that the Bush administration response to Katrina was sort of a replay of what happened in Iraq, in that telling the public one thing while something else was going on that had nothing to do with what they were telling us, only here the public could see it with their own eyes. I think that was the moment when Toto sort of, you know, kicked the curtain and we saw the Wizard of Oz. It's only gotten worse since then. The Kerry thing is unfortunate from the Democrats' point of view, even though it doesn't really seem like he did anything wrong except a typical tone-deaf, mangled Kerry joke. But it showed the power still of the White House to take something like that, inflate it, and have it take over the news cycle for 2 days, and the Democrats being powerless to counteract it in spite of the supposed liberal media. However, I think that's probably faded too. Whether it's revved up some parts of the Republican base and reminded them why they hate Democrats and a few more people will go to the polls, maybe. But then on the other hand, you had Ted Haggard happening right after that, which also was demoralizing for that base. So it may be a wash.
Quick prediction here, and then I want to ask you about the relationship of this with vote fraud and vote suppression. As we look at the election today, what is going to happen? What is the outcome going to be? Do you have any prediction at all?
No, I'm really not in that business. I do think, I find it hard to believe that as the House goes, the Senate won't go similarly. The Republicans have been arguing for the past couple of days that there's this surge in all their Senate candidates, but I don't think there's an example in history of where they have gone differently in a big midterm election. So that seems nonsense. It may be, if there is a Republican surge, maybe the Democrats will fall short in both. But who knows? As far as voter suppression, everyone in the country has fears about. I think that the Democratic Party, unless they're lying, has put together quite an army to go around the country and of lawyers and others to try to stop it or catch it. And we have to hope that they will if there are any such attempts. But there's no way to predict it in advance.
Vote fraud is something else involving the four companies that make the voting machines. The mainstream media view is that people who believe in it are a bit on the paranoid side. And yet, when I read Paul Krugman, he is very concerned about it.
I haven't written about it. I have to say I don't have strong conviction about it. I know Paul's point of view, but I think there's an argument to be made that it's not the case, that these companies have too much to risk in terms of their own, what they care about most, which is making money in their own bottom line, to be involved in fraud. I feel that no one really has all the facts, and you can poke holes in almost all the pieces that have been written that make the case about Ohio, which doesn't mean some things aren't going on. but I need more evidence to make my mind up about this.
With all of the people who were concerned about it, ranging from my 82-year-old mother to my best friend in Hawaii, I'm wondering why the New York Times hasn't done an in-depth study of vote fraud involving these companies.
I don't know. I'm not an editor of the Times. There's a separation between the news division and editorial, so I'm not privy. There's such a separation between news and editorial as there is between editorial and news and the business side that I don't hear those discussions about anything. If I did, for instance, if I had heard the discussions about some of our coverage of WMD, I would have, you know, I guess I would have, I'm not, you don't even have a voice as a columnist. That's the way the Times works. There's a real separation. You have a tremendous voice in your own column. But editorial writers and columnists are not involved in news decisions at the Times, and we don't report to the same people. So it's like two different divisions of a company. And I agree with that principle. I don't think editorialists should be involved in making news decisions. You know, Wall Street Journal, you would never see any bias that reflected their very right-wing editorial page by reading the paper, and the Times has the same standard. And so I don't hear about how decisions like that are made. And for all I know, we're doing an investigation. We could well be, and I wouldn't know about it. You know, many of our investigations, NSA eavesdropping, the Swiss story, the story we put up in the past week or so about government putting atomic secrets on the internet, I wasn't told about those stories in advance. I read them, nor would I be. So if we're doing some investigation of this, I wouldn't know about it.
Frank Rich, in working on your book, The Greatest Story Ever Sold, you did a lot of work concerning the blogosphere and the pundits, as well as reportage. What do you think prompted the reporters as a pack to ignore the WMD story, you know, whether it was true or not? What prompted them to be easier on Bush, even back to the 2000 election when they were easier on Bush's malapropisms than, say, Gore's claims that he helped invent the internet? I mean, the entire past 6 years.
I'm not sure I agree with entirely that generalization. I think, and there's several different factors to this. We can leave the 2000 election aside because the whole personnel has changed and so on. I have to say, I'm someone, by the way, in 2000 is very critical of both Gore and Bush and didn't much like either of them. But anyway, but the thing about the WMD coverage, which I go to in great detail, indeed, in my book, is there were some people who got it right, including at the Times and the Washington Post. There were reporters like Jim Risen at the Times, Walter Pincus at the Washington Post. There were these terrific reporters, Lande and Strobel at what was then Knight Ridder Newspapers, which is now McClatchy Papers because it's since been sold, who were on to the fact that intelligence was being manipulated, that we were being fed false information and so on. The Knight Ridder stuff was just ignored. Who knows why? People think it was under the radar because their major papers were in places like Miami and Philadelphia, not New York and Washington. In the case of the Times and the Washington Post, which played down these stories that were skeptical and played up things like Judy Miller's coverage of WMD or Bob Woodward's version of the Bush administration and its honorability in the case of the Washington Post, I think some of it was post-9/11 rallying effect. I think some of it, as I say in my book, was a desire to be caught up in, particularly in the boomer generation, which I'm a part of, to be caught up in what seemed to be, and in my view, was a just war in Afghanistan to take out the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, and somehow that sort of goodwill, which was shared by 94% of the American public, which supported the war in Afghanistan, was carried over into this detour of the Bush administration, and the press did not snap back to the skepticism it's supposed to have. It was a major failure. And places like the Times have made major changes because of it. I mean, almost all the personnel has changed. There are whole new standards about sourcing. And thankfully, I think the Times has become a much more aggressive paper and learned something from these mistakes of 4 years ago.
When looking at what became the story of the day over the past 6 years, it seemed to me that it was driven by Republican talking points, and it still seems to be, not just Kerry, but in your Sunday column, you talk about Lynn Cheney and her novel, which, of course, is a follow-up on the James Webb, George Allen flap. But it seems to me that if the main story is being repeated over and over, and that story originates either with Fox News or with Republican talking points, why are so many people still buying into this and moving the dialogue away from what's really going on?
I agree with your premise, but I don't agree with where things are now. First of all, we have to make a distinction between television, and particularly cable television, and print. And I do think the reporting of the major papers, particularly the Washington Post, the New York Times, and the LA Times, have been very aggressive over the past 2 years about everything, about detainee abuses, about torture, about violations of civil liberties, not only of detainees, but American citizens with the NSA stuff. Reconstruction in Iraq and the throwing out of $20 billion and the fraud. The LA Times has consistently broken that. On television news, particularly cable news, there is still a tendency, and not just at Fox, to go with either the cheap, easy debate about John Kerry's remark or talking points that seem to emanate from the White House. There are some exceptions, like David Gregory at NBC News is an aggressive White House reporter, but he's the exception. And whether you're watching CNN or Fox or MSNBC, you're right. But does the country really go for it anymore? I'm not convinced. The fact is that the majority of the country has been telling pollsters for months that they think the war in Iraq was a mistake. There's now a majority that feels we shouldn't have even taken out Saddam Hussein. It wasn't worth it. That they were misled or lied to by the president. And if you add up all the figures, more than 50% of the country, according to regular mainstream polls, want American troops out within a year. So they're not buying it. We'll see if this translates into individual races in an election, but they're not buying it. And also, we've seen a sinking of sorts of ratings at the cable news networks, including Fox. And so we can't get too carried away by that. You know, O'Reilly, Bill O'Reilly, his ratings are down. What are his numbers? It's all basically white men over 60. So it is a sort of self-contained world that doesn't necessarily represent all of America.
I threw this question out at Maureen Dowd, and I'm going to throw it at you. Sure. You have all of these pundits out there, all of these right-wing pundits. Do you think they actually believe what they're saying, or are they just
I think it's a very good question. I think some of them are utterly cynical. I don't think all of them are. And there's some people who I read – I'm not talking about their TV work, because I think everyone is just at their worst, basically, liberal and conservative, particularly in cable news shows. There's some conservatives out there who I think – are sincere. I don't agree with them. You know, they would include people like Rich Lowry, who's the editor of the National Review, and there are others. But there are others that are just Ann Coulter wannabes. She may be a cynic. I don't even know if she believes what she says. It's pathetic, and it's pathetic that anyone takes them seriously.
One final question here. Okay, the election is today. We can assume that the Democrats may or may not take one or both houses. Mm-hmm. If they do, what changes can we see? Will there be any? Cheney seems to say, and I read it earlier today, that Bush administration is pretty much going to ignore whatever happens.
I think we can't believe – I mean, I think it was idiotic of him to say it from a political point of view. I don't think he did his party any favors, just as the same way with Bush saying Rumsfeld's doing a fantastic job in the days before the election. Nonetheless, I don't think we can take any of it seriously. Let's assume whoever wins today is going to be a very, very divided Congress, no matter who's nominally in charge. I think the situation in Iraq is dire. I think it's getting worse by the minute. I think the entire country and world knows it, and I think the Bush administration knows it, and I think they're putting on a good front to get through this election. But when you had John Warner, the Republican conservative Iraq war supporter, head of the Armed Services Committee in the Senate, say 60 to 90 days, he said this about a month ago, if this is still going on, everything's on the table. And you have Jim Baker, Bush I's consigliere, co-chairing a commission to reexamine Iraq. I feel all the pieces are in place. There's going to be a major change of policy. There has to be. This cannot sustain itself. I think the Bush idea was kick the can down the road for 2 years and let the next president of whatever party pick up the pieces. But the situation is just too bad for American troops, and that government is falling apart, and the country is, if not technically in civil war, about to be. So he's not going to have the luxury of staying the course, even while saying he's not staying the course.
Frank Rich, whose latest book is The Greatest Story Ever Sold, The Decline and Fall of Truth from 9/11 to Katrina. I'm Richard Walensky on The Morning Show.